Thanks, everyone, for calling in on the line tonight. I think it's going to be a great call. I'm excited about it. This is a real deep subject. I've been studying this for quite some time now, and it's just actually mind-boggling. The background on this, now I'm not going to go over too much on the decoding tonight and how important it is. You're going to see that as we go through this. Everything that we're talking about tonight, now this is strictly based on what we have found in the individual master file. So you can see just by going through this, you're going to see how important it can be to have this document decoded to find out what's going on in that file. And just this whole straw man issue, and I'd like to give you just a little background on it. You know, for years and years, people have been telling me, you know, giving me all kinds of theories and this, that on the straw man, and, you know, telling me there's some kind of an account out there with, you know, millions if not trillions of dollars in it, and, you know, it's available to me and how I can, you know, write off my bills or my taxes or whatever with this account. Well, I got some, if we look at it that way, I do not have the evidence that that is out there. So that's the bad news that we have here. I don't have that evidence. Doesn't mean it's not there. I am thinking they're probably right. It probably is there. But I'm not going to presume anything. I never have, and I'm not going to start now. But what I have tonight and what we're going to start on, and again, it's a very deep subject, and I want to make sure you guys really understand it. So we're going to try to go through it kind of slow so you can get it, but it's going to be a continuation. It's probably going to cover maybe at least two calls, maybe three. We have it scheduled for three. If we finish it sooner, we'll, you know, tweak what we're going to do a little bit and do something else. But again, this is strictly based on what we have found in the individual master file. So let's just go through this. So we're going to talk about, again, I just titled this whole subject, The Straw Man Revealed. Now, it is based on secret coded files that reveal the truth, and these are these secret coded IMF files. So basically, and I know you all know that the IRS does keep secret coded information in files about you, and why are they keeping these files? Now, what we're coming down to, the IMF, when it's decoded with IRS manuals, it can, and it actually does, reveal the truth concerning this straw man issue, and we're going to see how it does apply to you. But first of all, I think it's important to kind of look at a little background. What exactly is a straw man? Well, if you go over to Black's Law Dictionary, and I've used the sixth edition, it's their definition of a straw man is a front, a third party who is put up in name only to take part in a transaction. It's one who acts as an agent for another for the purpose of taking title to reveal property and executing whatever documents and instruments the principal may direct respecting the property. So we'll go a little further into it. We're going to find out that straw man, and you probably, most of you already know it, is the all caps name man. In other words, you fill out and file a Social Security number, you send it in. It comes back, you send it in, and you write your name in upper and lower case letters, and it comes back all uppercase. Well, what just happened there? Yeah, they just created a straw man legal fiction. And so we want to go a little bit further with this. We want to look up in the law dictionary, what is a legal fiction? I think that's real important. A legal fiction, right out of Ballantine's Law Dictionary, it says a non-existent status or circumstances that the law pretends is real in order to achieve justice. Now, and I just kind of wanted to know here, do they mean pretend justice? Now, how can a law pretend something that is a lie is justice? Now, you know, it really does boggle the mind, and I can't comprehend it. And I don't think most thinking men can either. Basically, what we're looking at is when you start going into the law and all this legal stuff, most of it's a lie. Most of it's a lie. And we'll get to that a little later, maybe not on this call, but we will get to that a little more, a little deeper on that. So if now what we're going to look at here, we're going to start delving into this this straw man issue and what's going on and how it happens. Now here is where we found the straw man revealed right in the individual master file. Right there, it's in there. And here's where it happens. If you've ever gotten a notice of federal tax lien and it's been coded and you've got it, it's been posted on your IMF. Now, what happens here, it's been coded as a trustee of a decedent of an estate. You're going, wait a minute, what? Now, what are you talking about? So let's delve into that. So say you get a notice of federal tax lien. You get the paper and it says a notice of federal tax lien, and you know, I'm sure many of you have seen them. You know, they have the columns, type of tax and or kind of tax, and then they have your Social Security and the amount you owe and the dates on there. So if you've ever received a notice of federal tax lien, you're going to see that column, and it's marked, it says type of tax. Now you're going to look directly under that type of tax, and you're going to see on in that column where it shows 1040. Now, not all federal tax liens have this. It may occasionally show a different type of tax, but generally, and we're talking about the ones that say 1040. So once in a while, we'll see a tax lien on an entity, a trust or a corporation or something along that line. So you're not going to see the 1040 there. But on most of them, if they're coming after you in your name and Social Security number, it's going to say 1040 is the type of tax. Now, in the past, we've always believed that that meant when it said 1040, we always have said, you know, 1040 is not a type of tax, it's a form. We're going to compare that to what's on the individual master file. On there, we see as we go through these long document locator numbers, we're going to find a lien indicator transaction code posted on there. If you've got a lien, if they placed a lien on your name and Social Security number, you're going to look for a lien indicator transaction code, and it's posted on that IMF, and the number of the code is 582, and it's on the left-hand side as you're looking on your IMF. You'll see it. It's on the far left-hand side, and it's usually on the transaction codes are all posted, usually starting on the second page. Maybe if you've got more pages, you'll see more of them. But go through there, and you'll find on there a 582. If you've got a lien, you should have a 582. If you don't see one on there, you probably are going to want to update your IMF. And if it's been more than 120 days, that can be done without any problem at all. Now, what it states on that 582 posting for that transaction code, it says regular lien. We don't have a problem with that as far as it goes until we start again delving into what's going on here. So they've got you down regular lien on the individual master file. So then we're going to go over to an IRS manual. We're going to start looking to see what this means. We want to look up what their translation of the transaction code 582. We want to see what they have on there and what it says and what it means. So we go over the IRS manual, and we use, of course, the law enforcement manual. And just so you know, by the way, whenever we talk about or have make a statement, we always take the page out of the book where we found it, out of their books, so they can't argue with us. you know, we're not going to give you the whole book. It'd be, it'd all obviously be so cumbersome because, you know, in many of your decoded documents, you see, you know, several false postings, many, many of them. If we tried to give you the book for every one, it'd be so cumbersome that it would be impossible for you to even deal with and for you to get into the file at the IRS. So we don't want to do that. So we're just going to give you a few basic pages. We might give you the front cover of the LEM and then the page that it came off of. But again, they're not going to be able to rebut this thing. Now, on transaction code 582, here's what it says. It says, now it says a bunch of stuff before this, but we're going to take out the part that's really juicy, the good part. Obviously, the whole page will be on there, so you'll get both what's before and after this part, so they can see we're not taking it out of context. We're just taking the part that really applies. Transaction code 582, TC582 on the IMF. This TC is also used as a 2032A indicator. Well, you know, we've looked at that for years, and I kept thinking, what? I wonder what a 2032A indicator, and we've checked everywhere. We couldn't find anything on this thing. It took a long time. Well, what does it mean? Well, let's go back over to that notice of federal tax lien that you got, and under that type of tax again. We want to check this out again. So after a lot of research, we did find that the IRS placing the notice of federal tax lien, the type of tax 1040. Let's go back there. We've always rebutted this. We've always stated, well, a 1040 is not a type of tax, but it's a form. Well, guess what, folks? We've been wrong. We have been wrong. Now, here's where we're going to go with this. This is where it's going to start getting real juicy. Now, we do have a rebuttal letter for this, and that is available on these liens. And it does go through this stuff pretty carefully, but it's sometimes easier if you can have someone just plain, flat out tell you, explain to you what it also means. But I think if the IRS receives this, they're going to know. So 1040, type of tax. Well, if you go over to Title 26 in the United States Code and you pull up 1040, and here's what it says under A, general rule. If the executor of the estate of any decedent transfers to a qualified heir, and then in parentheses it says within the meaning of 2032A, E1, any property with respect to which an election was made under Section 2032A. Remember the 2032A under the type of tax and the IMFTC code 582? It says it's also used as a 2032A indicator. So let's go back over that again. If the executor of the estate of any decedent, now what does that mean? It means someone died and left you an estate. And basically what they're saying on the tax lien is you haven't paid the taxes. Well, if that's not true, in some cases it could be very well true. Maybe someone, you know, maybe your parents died and left you a big estate, and maybe you haven't paid the taxes. So that then this would apply, I suppose, wouldn't it? Well, we're going to show you how it doesn't actually, even in that type of situation. However, if that isn't true, then this right here, right there, is enough to should stop it right there, because you're not an executor of an estate. No one's died. No one's left you any estate. What is the lien doing on here? This is what this means. So let's go on a little bit. It's getting kind of juicy here. It gets kind of exciting after a little while. So you're wondering, well, okay, what is a 2032A indicator? Well, if you look up the laws, and I always like to use Cornell. The reason I like Cornell so well is because when you pull up the Cornell laws under Title 26, especially something like Title 26 United States Code 1040, Section 1040, on there they'll have the 2032A. They'll have that highlighted. So if you hit on it, it'll take you to where they're what they're talking about here under the meaning of 2032. So in other words, if I hit on 2032A when I pull up Title 26 U.S. Code 1040, and I hit 2032A, it's going to take me right over to 2032A, which is what we did. So we went over to 2032A, and again, it took us a long time to understand this. We never could figure out what the connection was because we never could figure out that the 1040 type of tax was actually a code title. That's where we, you know, the light never came on. So finally we got the light turned on. So then we went over to, again, hit 2032A. Now here's what it says. 2032A, valuation of certain farms, et cetera, and real property. Election agreement. The election under this section shall be made on the return of tax imposed by Section 2001. So there's another highlighted benchmark there where you can hit on that 2001. This is how you can research it. You can follow the dots. That's how you connect them when you hit on those. So we can be real thankful for Cornell Law because they've really helped us be able to tie these together really quick. When you hit on the 2001, it takes you right over there. So let's do that. We hit Title 26, United States Code 2001, under 8. Now, you got to understand, we're just taking the juicy parts. Many, many times, most of the time, there's a lot more to these. There's a lot more to read there. A lot of it doesn't even apply. Some may apply a little bit, but we're taking the very certain ones that do for certain apply in this situation. So again, we hit on Title 26, USC 2001. Talks about A, imposition. Here we go. A tax is hereby imposed on the transfer of the taxable estate of every decedent who is a citizen or resident of the United States. There it is, folks. There it is. Now, going a little bit deeper here. We're going to look at, we're going to go over to an IRS manual, and it's the ADP, and it is an IRS information manual, and it talks about Form 56. Now, we did a call on Friday, and it actually is a follow-up to this call, only we did it first. But what I want you to do is go over to our Friday call, which is dated the 19th of October, and pull up that and listen to that. It talks about that Form 56. Form 56 is a notice of fiduciary relationship. It says if no return is filed. So you want to look into that fiduciary relationship. It's real important, and it's the crux of what we're doing here. So we knew about the Form 56 for a while. We just didn't exactly know what to do with it. And now we've got the information of what to do with it. If you go over to that call, you can listen and find out what that Form 56 is all about and what you can do with it. So it's good information. So now we're going to go over to the IRS forms books, and here's an explanation for that Form 56. It says, notice concerning fiduciary relationship is used by persons to notify the IRS that they are acting in fiduciary capacity for other persons. And it gives you a couple codes. It says IRC Section 6903 and Regulations Section 301.6903-1. So that means the Code of Federal Regulations and the Internal Revenue Code. So then we're going to look at, well, what is a fiduciary? What do you mean? Notice of fiduciary relationship. What is a fiduciary? So we went over to Ballantyne's Law Dictionary, and we looked that up, too. We thought, well, probably be good for us to know what that means. So what is a fiduciary relationship, and what are they talking about? It's a person who is entrusted with handling money or property for another person. Okay. Well, could that be our local IRS agent? I don't know. But, once you go over and pull up that Friday call, you'll find out who can be a fiduciary for you, who you can elect for a fiduciary. So here we go, filing forms. Now, pursuant to this Ballantine's what a fiduciary is. A member that's a person who's entrusted with handling money or property for another person. So if no form is filed, then the IRS can file a Form 56 Notice of Fiduciary Relationship on your behalf. So here's what we want you to do. We don't want you to let them do that. We want you to do it first, okay? So you want to be the one filing a Form 56 instead of letting them do it. Now, you're the one that's in charge here. This is about you. So it is absolutely up to you to do it. You don't want to let anyone else do it. So a couple things that I also wanted to point out, which is, I think, really important here. If you go over to Title 26, United States Code 7506, and, again, that's the Internal Revenue Code, or excuse me, the U.S. Code, but it is the tax code. Now, it talks about the administration of real estate acquired by the United States person charged with. So the secretary shall have charge of all real estate which is or shall become the property of the United States by judgment of forfeiture under the Internal Revenue Laws, or which has been or shall be assigned, set off, or conveyed by purchase or otherwise to the United States in payment of debts or penalties arising under the laws relating to internal revenue, or which has been or shall be vested in the United States by mortgage or other security for the payment of such debts, or which has been redeemed by the United States. Now, this last line I want you to really listen to, and it says, and of all trusts created by the use of the United States in payment of such debts due them. I want to read that again because that's really important here. We're going to get into this. We're going to get into it real heavy. It says, and of all trusts created by the use of the United States in payment of such debts due them. Okay, well, what in the heck does that mean? Well, let's go see. So how did this happen without your knowledge and agreement? How was a trust created? And was there a trust created? So let's look over here. Under Title 26, USC 6903. Now, here's the rights and obligations of a fiduciary. Now, it says, upon notice to the secretary that any person is acting for another person in a fiduciary capacity, such fiduciary shall assume the powers, the rights, the duties, and privileges of such other person in respect of a tax imposed by this title. So, if someone is acting for another person, so in other words, if I appoint, and I can appoint anyone I want, if I appoint someone to be my fiduciary, then they're going to assume the powers, the rights, and the duties. Now, what is part of the duties? Well, if there's any taxes due, wouldn't that be a duty? Wouldn't the person, the fiduciary, have the duty to be certain that these taxes are paid? That would be a duty. So let's go on with this. So if you haven't paid enough money to the IRS, they may decide to bring charges against you for a crime that you did not commit by holding you responsible for failing to do your fiduciary responsibilities of paying taxes due on an estate of a decedent. Now, what we're looking at here, and again, this is where it gets really, really heavy here. Basically, and now, here again, I have the evidence that what they have done in that IMF is they've made you a fiduciary. Remember, we went over that. They made you a fiduciary for the straw man. Okay? So they've got an all caps named man through the Social Security number. Got an all caps name man here. Now, you're the one responsible for anything that all caps name man does or doesn't do, or what they say you failed to do, or whatever. So now they put that lien on there. Now that's where they're doing it. They're saying that you failed to pay the taxes for the straw man. And that's basically what it's coming right down to. Now, when they talk about the decedent, the state of the decedent, when you become a straw man, you're now a decedent. So who died? Well, unless someone actually died and left you an estate and made you the fiduciary for that estate, would the above actually apply to you? Absolutely not. But they're saying it does because, again, everything is based on that prima facie evidence. Remember, that's evidence that until and unless rebutted with better evidence stands, and it will stand against you. Okay, so, again, how important is it to get this IMF decoded? And especially if you got a lien on there, now you've got hard copy proof of what they've done against you. Now, that's fraud, folks. That's just downright fraud. This isn't the truth. This is what they've done. So it's pretty important. Now, here's a couple other things that I wanted to bring up, too. In the Code of Federal Regulations, and that's in the CFR, we went ahead and we looked up that Title 26. Remember the Form 56, it talked about Title 26, and it's a Code of Federal Regulations at Title 26, 301-6903-1. It says where notice is not filed. If the notice of the fiduciary capacity described in paragraph B of this section is not filed with the district director before the sending of a notice of deficiency by registered mail or certified mail, no notice of deficiency will be sent to the fiduciary. Okay, no notice of deficiency will be sent to the fiduciary. So that's what they're telling you here. They're telling you that we've set this thing up in a trust. Okay, the straw man trust. So there is a trust there. Is there millions of dollars? I don't know. I don't have evidence of that. But I'm not going to say there's not. There very well could be, but be careful if you start using this and trying to use that straw man account. Just be careful what you're doing if you do. I'm not telling you to do it, but I'm telling you that if you do look into doing it, just be real, real careful. I know people in jail for this kind of stuff. So, again, be careful. So, is this where the IRS actually turns you into a straw man? Yes, that's it. Now, again, we're going to go back to fiduciary in Black's Law Dictionary, 6th edition. It's a person holding the character of a trustee or the character analogous to that of a trustee. A trustee is all about a trust. So that's what they've done. They've made you a fiduciary there. So we went ahead and we looked up in Ballantyne's Law Dictionary, we looked up trustee. Now, the person who holds the legal title to trust property for the benefit of the beneficiary of the trust with such powers and subject to such duties as are imposed by the terms of the trust and the law. Now, this, if you look at this, that implies that there's a contract that has been agreed upon. Okay, now this is, again, an implied contract. So when did you ever agree with them to be a trustee? When did you ever agree to take on any responsibility for a straw man? Well, I don't ever remember doing it, but that's what they have. That's their, again, their evidence, and that's what's going on here. So if you allow that to stand as evidence, believe me, they're going to use it against you. They're just going to do it. Now, in Title 26 U.S.C. 6901, remember, again, that was on that Form 56. It says method of collection, income, estate, and gift taxes. Remember, they're saying you didn't pay the taxes on your estate that was gifted to you, so you owe some money. So it says transferees, the liability at law or in equity of a transferee of property. And then it goes on, of a decedent in the case of a tax imposed by Chapter 11 relating to estate taxes. Now, Chapter 11 is bankruptcy, just so you know. So, you know, it goes on and on. How deep is this rabbit hole going to go? You know, I'm still finding more on it all the time as I go through this stuff, more and more. But that's what they're saying. They're saying you have a liability. You were given some property. The property had taxes owing on it. You didn't pay the taxes. So, of course, you owe. It's their duty. They're duty-bound to go after it. So unless you rebut that, there you go. So transferee, we wanted to look up that because they talked about a transferee, liability at law and equity of a transferee of property. So who is that? So, again, we went over to Ballantines, and transferee is a person to whom a transfer is made. Transfer, placing property in the hands of another. So that, again, is in Ballantine's Law Dictionary. Well, my question to you, the IRS has you in your hands, so do you feel in good hands now? I know I sure wouldn't. So over at Title 26 U.S.C. 6324, liens for estate tax. So we thought we'd better go over there and just check what the actual code said about liens and about estate tax and the whole thing. So number one, it says upon gross estate, unless the estate tax imposed by Chapter 11, again, that, remember that's bankruptcy, is sooner paid in full or becomes unenforceable by reason of lapse of time, it shall be a lien upon the gross estate of the decedent for 10 years from the date of death, allowed by any court having jurisdiction thereof, shall be divested of such lien. So are they saying that we're in Chapter 11? I don't know. That part, I haven't had time to research that as much as I like. It appears so. At this point, I'm not sure, but it sure is looking like it. So discharge of liability. Now, this is what I thought was interesting. In Title 26 of the United States Code 2204, it talks about general rule if the executor makes a written application. Now, who is the executor? Well, basically, they're the executor of the estate, okay, the estate being the straw man. If the executor makes a written application to the secretary for a determination of the amount of tax and discharge from personal liability, therefore, the secretary shall notify the executor of the amount of the tax. The executor, on payment of the amount of which he is notified and on furnishing any bond which may be required for any amount for which the time for payment is extended, shall be discharged from personal liability for any deficiency in tax thereafter found to be due and shall be entitled to a receipt or writing showing such discharge. So that's what they're doing. They're walking away from it. They're discharging themselves from any liability. They're the executor, but they're walking away free and clear. Well, guess what? You really need to go over and listen to that call that we did on Friday because we're going to turn that back around on them. And that's exactly what we want to do. We don't want you to be the one that they're going to hit, and they're not going to have any part to do in it. Now, it also talks about a bond. Now, I've been studying some stuff. I'm in study on that now. We may bring this up on a future call on furnishing these bonds because it says executor on payment of the amount of which he is notified and on furnishing any bond. So they have to furnish a bond in many cases. So we want to look at that, and we'll be talking about that more at a later time. So let's see. Executor, it appears that they make you the trustee and themselves the executor. Then they relieve themselves from any personal liability, taking all of your assets. That's about what they do. They want to walk away with your stuff. So who is the executor? Well, it appears, again, it appears that any agent who has contacted the secretary of a notice of a deficiency. And that's where it starts, notice of deficiency. Remember, on the notice of deficiency, that's when they will file a substitute return concerning you, okay? When that substitute for return goes in on your file, that's when they start their dirty work. That's when they start this fiduciary relationship. That's when they build the straw man. Now, at the time of the lien is when it's complete. That's when the straw man issue comes in. They turn you into the straw man. Now they're going to start coming after you. So who is the executor? Well, it appears that any agent who has contacted the secretary, again, of a notice of a deficiency has now become the executor of the constructive trust they have created in your name, making you the trustee. Okay? So here we are, constructive trust. I want to go through this. I'm going to now here again is where the straw man is born. I've got John Doe straw man, all cap names, trustee for a decedent of an estate. So it's that all caps name that's getting us in trouble. Okay, now here's something. The all caps name straw man is a creation of the government and the IRS. It is not you. So remember, that's not you. That when your Social Security card came and it had the all caps name in, that was their creation for a fictional man. It's not a creation for the all the flesh and blood man. This is a fictional creation. Okay? It appears that the straw man account was created for you when you signed up for the Social Security benefits. Now, it may go back further. Again, I don't have the evidence of this. It looks like, in my opinion, it looks like it started with the birth certificate. Now, again, I don't have the hard copy evidence. If I get it, you'll be the first ones to know because, again, I don't have that, so I can't absolutely say for certain, but by golly, it sure looks like it to me. Now, it appears that the straw man account was opened, which was then activated when you did not file a return after you had filed one in the past. Okay? Now, here's something that, to me, really wraps it up. And this is where I'm going to wrap it up tonight, too. We got a lot more to cover, but this is a definition that I want you to really think about. It's in Black's Law Dictionary, the 6th edition, constructive trust. A trust raised by construction of law or arising from an expressed trust. Whenever the circumstances of a transaction are such that the person who takes the legal estate and property cannot also enjoy the beneficial interest without necessarily violating some established principle of equity, the court will immediately raise a constructive trust and fasten it upon the conscience of the legal owner so as to convert him into a trustee for the parties who in equity are entitled to the beneficial enjoyment. Now, I'm sure most of you have heard about what happened with Sherry Jackson. This is exactly what they did in court. They turned her into a constructive trust. Constructive trust. That's exactly what they've done. Now, they're saying, you owe some money, you better get it paid. And that's exactly what they do in court situations every time. This is all about commerce, for folks. It's all about the money. Follow the money, and you'll find out what's going on every time. And without a doubt, this is absolutely what's going on. So I'm going to stop it there because I know you probably got some questions, and I really want you to understand this. So we're going to start. We'll go back over the constructive trust definition on the next call, and we'll outline that again and then start from there and see if maybe we can wrap it up on the next call. I'll see how the questions are to see if you're understanding this. Maybe we'll have to go over it again. But right now I'm going to go ahead and take it out of lecture mode. Now you're going to have to hit star 6 so we can open it up for questions. Any questions?
Hi, Sharon. I got a question.
You bet.
Wayne from New York.
Okay, great.
Shirley Jackson was found guilty for not filing for 4 years. Now, if she did the IMS decoding and I guess closed bank accounts, revoked voter registration, et cetera, et cetera, would she have a better leg to stand on?
Well, in my opinion, and I don't want to get into this too fully, but in my opinion, the first problem was that she had lawyers working with her. Now, from what I understand, she did have some decoding done. I know that we did not do any of her decoding. Now, what you do with the decoding is, you know, if you don't know what to do with it, and her lawyers should have known, but being lawyers, I would imagine that they would get highly, they probably would be sanctioned for trying to bring something like that into the court. So lawyers are very, very restricted. And, there's only a certain amount of things that they can do. And being in that situation is real tough. But go over again, listen to that Friday call, and you're going to find out what this Form 56 can do for you and how it can help you even in a situation like that. Okay, next question.
Hi, Sharon.
Uh-huh.
Hi. I don't exactly understand how the issue of the capitalized letters of a person's name make him the straw man. Why does it involve his name in capital letters?
Well, because if you look at corporate law, if you know anything at all about corporations and that type of thing, a corporation always uses capital letters. Okay, it's just kind of the law of corporations. So when you see that happening, you know that they've turned, because in school, we learned how to write our names with upper and lowercase letters. Everybody did. But when corporate law says that if an entity, in other words, if you know anything about artificial entities, say you're working with a trust, okay, and you spell the trust name, say it's ABC Trust. Well, if someone writes out a check to ABC Trust and they put XYZ Trust, that's a completely different trust. Or if they put ABD Trust, that's a completely different entity. You have an entity named Blue Skies, and you have BLU SKYS. Okay, that is one trust or corporate entity. Now, if someone else comes along and spells it BLUESKIES, that's a completely different entity. Okay, one change in one letter makes it a different entity.
But
and that
how,
is the law of trust.
But how is the straw man using the same name as we have?
It's not the same name. It's a completely different name.
But it's the same name except in capital letters.
No, it's not the same name. It's a different name because it is capital letters. It may sound the same as your name, but it is not you. It is not your name. Okay? It is a creation of the corporate government. Okay? So that they can interface with you. And that's a whole other story. So we'll get that to that another time. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have a question. You said the executor, in this case, that would be the IRS, or would it be the agent?
It's not the IRS. It is an agent. Normally, it's an agent of the IRS because they start at the notice of deficiency, then it turns into or it can start into a lien or a levy. That's where an agent is involved.
Okay?
What they're saying is they're the executor and you're the trustee. The trustee has the liability.
Now, who is the trustee? The flesh and blood me or the straw man me?
They're trying to say that the flesh and blood man is the trustee for the all caps name man. They're trying to tie the two together. They're trying to say both are the same. And they're not. They're two separate entities.
Right. And then the all caps man, would he be considered the beneficiary?
No. They're considered the beneficiaries.
Okay, so the executor of the estate is the beneficiary.
Yes, it can be. Or, you know, in many cases, it'll be the United States government, you know. I really am a little shady on where it goes from there. I doubt if the agent gets the money, it'll pass over to the United States. Now, they'll probably get part of it, but they, you know, most of it'll go to the government.
Okay, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon.
Yes.
Sharon, Ben in New Mexico.
Hi.
According to the Sherry. Sherry's case and also Ed Brown's case.
Uh-huh.
That was for willful failure of file, I think. Both
sure.
Of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you surmise would have been the scenario if they had demanded their constitutional rights and a section, Article 3 court?
Well, you know, there are no Article 3.
There are no Article 3 courts.
Yeah, we know that. You know, we can prove
that. Well, but it's there if you demand it. Because their oath says it. They will uphold the Constitution of the United States as the supreme law of the land.
Well, you know, I've been really studying this down deep, and what we know, and I'm probably going to be telling you a little more than I know here, but we do know that this country is in default.
Martial law.
Yeah,
right.
No, we're not under martial law.
Okay.
We're in bankruptcy.
Oh, since 33 or 35, yeah.
Yes. Now I've been looking at some stuff, and it looks to me like, and the stuff I've been studying, takes the bankruptcy clear back to the Constitution of the United States.
Wow.
Yeah. So if that's a bankruptcy, now you've got a judge that takes an oath of office to the Constitution. What is he promising to do? He's promising to uphold the bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it makes a big difference. So a little food for thought there. We won't get too deep in that tonight, but
okay.
Little food for
thanks.
Thought. Think about it, and we'll talk about it again sometime. Any more questions?
Yeah, Sharon, this is Kurt.
Mm-hmm.
What is your response to those who suggest that we do take control of the straw man?
Well,
there is a whole school of thought out there that suggests that, not a school of thought, but a suggested strategies, that's our problem, is that we do not have control of the straw man, and that we should regain that control.
Right, and you know, I haven't, I feel that probably is correct. We don't want to claim to be the straw man, which is what I see many of them do. Okay, so if they claim the straw man account, in many cases they're saying, I am the straw man. You don't want to do that. So if you go and you just have, you know, it's the same thing as a trust situation. Okay, you are not the trust. Okay,
correct.
But you can operate the trust as a fiduciary for that trust. So, you know, in some
contracted to do so.
Right. In some cases, you may want to do that. But in this case, what we're looking at, and it may be something you want to do later, and I'm looking at that. I really am. But what we're looking at right now, and again, that with that Form 56, basically, is you're appointing someone else as fiduciary for that straw man. You don't have to be the fiduciary for this.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So it's something we're looking at, and we will be, you know, I don't want to get into it too much tonight. It's a lot deeper, and, you know, it is a very deep rabbit hole. So let's take the next question.
Karen?
Yes.
You said these calls are recorded on the website.
Yes.
Could you tell me where, which website?
Yes, it's on the Paralegal Research Advocates. It's www.paralegalresearchadvocates, you have to spell out the whole thing, .com, all one word. And it'll be on there by date. So it would be November 1st for this one. Okay?
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon, could I just make a comment?
Yes.
Ann from Washington. With regard to the fellow who asked about how did the capital letters make a difference,
mm-hmm.
just for him, again, I'm not sure if he really understood it, but it doesn't matter if your name will still read the same, you'll still pronounce your name John Doe, it's just that all capital letters represents a legal fiction, or it does not represent the proper name, flesh and blood living person.
Right.
And so that's how the name is completely different. It's the capital letters that make the difference, and he can check his driver's license or mortgage or credit card or, you know, those kinds of things. He'll find his name is in all caps on those instruments as well.
Right. That's right, Ann. Thank you.
What are the implications of that if they're on driver's licenses and credit cards and so forth?
I didn't understand the question.
What are the implications of what she just said, that your name is in capital letters on credit cards or the driver's license? Does that mean that they all belong to the straw man?
Yes, it's how they operate in commerce. They don't want a flesh and blood man operating in commerce because of, and it's all dealing with this bankruptcy thing. If you want to operate in commerce, they want it to be in the straw man and the all caps name. And it is a very long, involved subject there. We may hit on that on another call. But that is basically what they're doing. They're turning basically everyone into a straw man so they can operate in commerce and operate with you, claiming parts of what you do in the straw man realm for commerce reasons.
Is it a function of jurisdiction then?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Is that what gives them jurisdiction?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because they can issue bonds on this thing. That's what you find. Sherry Jackson, I'm sure, has a bond on her right now. It's issued through the straw man. They're saying that the straw man owes some money, didn't pay the money that they're requiring. And basically what it comes down to is they're trying to balance their books. So they're just trying to zero out their books. So, they've got a big discrepancy there. So if they can't balance the books, they'll put you in jail. So,
and the individual person, the flesh and blood person, is called the what is it again? The trustee or the fiduciary? Which term is it again? The flesh and blood.
What they're doing is they're making the flesh and blood man the fiduciary or the trustee for the straw man.
Okay?
Okay. And that could be a type of fiduciary. A fiduciary is just someone that acts in your stead.
Right. And using the Form 56, you're saying, I don't want to be that trustee anymore. I want that agent in Tennessee or wherever to be the
Well, the Form 56 is you're just saying basically that I'm appointing someone else to act in my stead, which you can do. And, if you want it to be a, I don't care, an IRS agent, that's up to you.
For this owed, that they think is owed.
I didn't understand the question.
Saying that folks say they become liable to pay to the government, the corporation of the United States, the money that they claim is owed by the straw man.
Right. So, and again, it appoints them that Form 56, and in like a court case, you can use that form to say appoint a fiduciary debtor. That's the one that would owe the money or go to jail or whatever. Or you could appoint someone the fiduciary creditor, however you want to do it. Now, with what we're doing, we just need to just appoint one person, and we can let them fight out because they're going to have to get an attorney anyway and get this thing figured out. So that's where we want to go with it. But in a court case, you might want to go a little deeper and, appoint, go a little further with appointees on that. I know someone that's appointed like 30 people, so you can do that too.
More than one person, whoever may have signed the notice of lien, if more than one person, so-and-so representing such and such other person, which is what they do sometimes. They have one in, and then they have the electronic signature.
Okay. Right, and that's what we see most of the time. So, if you want to appoint both of them, you can do that too.
Sharon?
Yes.
Anne here from Washington. Another comment I wanted to make, and you can correct me or amplify this as you see fit. The other understanding that I have is that the civil state, which is a corporation in and of itself, is not a living flesh and blood entity. And
right.
The only way that can have an interaction with its creator, collective, sovereigns, people, live flesh and blood people, is by turning them into legal fictions because they can only legally interact or conduct commerce with legal fictions or something of that nature.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so that's why they have to turn us into a legal fiction because they are not permitted to actually interact with us as living creatures because we created them and we're the ones who call the shots unless we become under their control by being turned into legal fictions.
Yes, and that is absolutely correct. So they want to put us in a position where they have control over us, and the only real way they can do it, again, we're sovereigns, and they know this, so the only way they can do it is by this whole turning you into a straw man, this fictional entity, and then coming after you for what they're saying you failed to do or you didn't do the whole thing. So you're right, Ann. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Karen. Yes. Are you using this Form 56 at this time? And one thing you mentioned earlier about being the first one to use it, if you already have a lien, is it too late to use a Form 56?
Absolutely not. I would use it as you can use it any time. You can appoint a fiduciary any time you want. And, we are starting to use it. We haven't had any results yet, just so you know, because we're just starting this. Now, what we have done is we've set it up for this. So what we've started with is a notice of express trust, which is a trust that you can set up in lieu of their constructive trust, because a constructive trust is not a legal trust. So, but an express trust is. So we've turned it around saying, okay, we'll go ahead and contract with you for this trust, but we're going to do it under our terms, or my terms, and not under yours. So you're going to agree to this. Now, then you step in with the Form 56 and tells the IRS, basically all the Form 56 does is it tells the IRS who's the responsible party. And it's their form. You get to fill it out and send it right to them. It gives you the instructions on where to send it, the whole get-go. I would also send one to the agent involved and say, hey, you know, you wanted to do this so bad. Okay, go ahead. Now, you're now the fiduciary here. You're the fiduciary debtor. Guess you better pay up. So, and just so you know, they've taken on, now these people are our, they work for us, okay? They're our employees, so to speak. So we can tell them what to do, and we need to tell them what to do, and that's what this form is all about. We need to tell them what to do and how to do it, and bingo. Otherwise, they're, you know, if we don't tell them what to do, they're just going off and doing their own thing, and they're getting away with a whole lot of stuff, and, you know, we don't want them to do that anymore. So we got to tell them what to do. It is their form. You don't have to sign it under penalties of perjury, and that's what I like about the form.
So, Sharon, so, you get that form from the IRS website?
Yes. Just go over to irs.gov, click on Forms and Publications. Up in the upper right-hand corner, there's a little space for search. Just put in Form 56. It comes right up. Also comes up with all the instructions that you need to fill it out. So if you need some help.
Yeah. Revision 7-2004.
Yep. Any other questions?
Well, just one quick thing, maybe, is this issue of states being republics by virtue of them not being able to be disbanded by the federal government, making us, therefore, I guess, citizens of states rather than citizens of the United States. I mean, citizens of the Republic of Texas, Indiana, New York, Massachusetts.
Yeah, you betcha. And, you know, you are not a citizen of the United States. However, they try to get you to admit that you are, and they try to use the Social Security number. The Social Security number, in my opinion, is not a good thing. However, using it with combining with what we're going into, it's going to turn out to be not such a bad thing after all. So we're going to go more into this as we go along, and there's just an awful lot to learn, folks. There's just a ton of stuff to learn, but it is exciting, and I am really, really pleased to be able to bring you this information and the information on the Form 56. There are some other things we can do also. There's we got some choices here. In my opinion, this is the simplest of the choices. And we have a remedy if they just choose, you know, everyone says, well, Sharon, they just ignore everything we do. Well, we've got a remedy now for if and when they do try to ignore the Form 56. There is a remedy for that, and we can go forward with it, but we obviously got to give them opportunity to act on it before we do that. So we'll hit remedy on a later call, too.
Sharon?
Yes.
There are lots of the adhesion contracts that we are unaware of that we sign that does make us U.S. citizens, and don't you think those need to be rescinded?
They can be. However, again, with the new information that I'm getting, I don't see where it's going to be necessary. You're not really going to even have to worry about it with the direction we're going.
Okay.
Because this gets really, really deep. We've just barely scratched the top tip of the iceberg here. The direction that we're going to end up going in my opinion, it is the answer. Again, I did not want to look at even, I didn't want to hear anymore about the straw man issue until I had hard copy evidence. So anytime anyone would bring it up, I'd say, okay, where's the evidence? Oh, I'll get it to you. Nothing ever came. Well, when I found it myself, I said, okay, I'm going to, by seeing this, I need to look at this stuff. And it was a real eye-opener for me. So I'm hoping it is with you too. Once you see, I know a lot of people have been real leery about the straw man issue. I still am on some parts of it, but I do know they do it. Again, that evidence that we just showed you, where it is in the IMF, they do turn you into this thing. It's as plain as the nose on your face.
Hey, Sharon.
Yes.
Yes, this is John in Florida.
Hi.
No matter where we are in the process, are you saying we should go ahead and get this form now and fill it out?
Well, if you're not in collection, it depends on, if you just get a letter from them that says, hey, you owe us some money, or where's your tax form, you know, they're not really saying anything. But, if you're in collection, absolutely.
Okay, yeah, I'm not at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it until they, if and when they go there. In many cases, a lot of our people have never, ever had a problem. So, you know, let's don't create one where there is none. If you're never bothered, fine. If you are bothered, then we go forward with this thing. We hit them with that form, bing, bang, boom. There we go.
Gotcha. We'll let sleeping dogs lie then right now.
Yeah, I would if it was me, absolutely.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the citizen thing for a second, in Black's Law Dictionary, there's a site in 6th edition that says citizens are members of a political community who, in their associated capacity, have established or submitted themselves to the dominion of a government for the mm-hmm. promotion of their general welfare and the protection of their individual as well as collective rights.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in a situation there where whether you call yourself a state citizen or U.S. citizen or American citizen or whatever, the thing that sticks out in my mind is submitting yourself to the dominion of a government.
That's
and as a sovereign free man, I'm not subject to statutory law unless I choose to make myself subject to statutory law.
And that's
a sovereign free man is only obligated to common law, and those are small.
Absolutely, and you're absolutely correct. The statutes are not for us. Even the Constitution, that's not for us.
Right.
That is for us to use to keep our public servants in line. So they're tools. In my opinion, they're tools to use, and they're pointed at the public servants, so we need to use them to keep these guys in line because they won't stay in line. They keep doing what they're not supposed to be doing. So,
right.
You know, that's a great tool. Good point. Thanks for bringing that up. I'm glad you did.
Mm-hmm.
Anything
did you
else?
The statutes are for us to keep them in line? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. The statutes are for them. We can
and
use
for
them.
Corporate they're, persons.
Yep, we can use them to keep our government in line. That's what they're for. Now, they always like to turn it around and make it look like you're subject to them, but you're not subject to them. They are. And you have the power to use them for your benefit and to keep them where they're supposed to be. If they're attacking you, then you go look at the statute, what they're supposed to be doing. that's the way it works. So
remember that the supreme law of the land was created to limit government.
That's exactly right. That's all the Constitution is. If you go read that thing over again, you're going to see that that's exactly what they were doing. But read it again in light of thinking about a bankruptcy. And when you do that, it kind of reads a little different. So, you know, it's an interesting scenario. Now, I'm not saying it is, but this was pointed out to me, and it does look right. So try reading it again. So is there any of the questions?
Yeah, Sharon, this is Bob in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing tonight?
I'm good, thanks.
You've given us a lot of information. I'm still somewhat confused. However, one quick question. On my notice of tax lien, it simply states 6672 instead of 1040. How does that make this different, or does it?
6672, isn't that, I believe that is a statute for,
I believe that's business tax pass-throughs.
Penalty statute is probably what it's for. You know, I think it's going to work the same. What we can do, though, is, we probably should look up the statute and see how it fits together. Either way, you know what it comes down to anyway? Is if you do the Form 56, appoint them fiduciary, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it still makes them liable.
6672 is failure to collect and pay over a tax or an attempt to evade or defeat a tax.
Right. Yeah. I believe there's a penalty that goes with that, too.
Yes, trust fund recovery penalty is what it is on business taxes.
Okay. But again, you know, I, in my opinion, it's not really going to matter here or there. When you use that notice of fiduciary form, then they're responsible anyway, so whatever they want to do with it is up to them. You know,
they're responsible.
However much they want to say they owe is fine with me.
Mm-hmm. And that's this all has to go hand in glove with the express trust, notice of express trust, is that correct?
Absolutely. It's like the finishing touch. It's the final thing. We've notified them. Now we're notifying the IRS who's responsible.
You alluded to the fact that there might be another step if they did choose to ignore this. How time-consuming is that, and what is that, if you don't mind?
Well, it will involve a show cause hearing. Basically, I believe if you put in the paperwork for a show cause hearing, that probably make them drop whatever they're doing and hope the whole thing goes away. I don't think we'll go there, but if we have to, we may have to on these, especially on the first few of them, may have to go there to show them that, you know, you really mean business. You know, we're not playing with this. This isn't a joke. We're not going to let this go. Here's the here's what we do next. And but we'll get there as we go along.
Have you seen how that affects the filing of the NFTL at the county or state level?
Well, what we're shooting for is getting them to release it. And in my opinion, when you make them fiduciary.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to not want to have a lien on there because they're going to be responsible for any money that is due. And you can prove it because you've got the paperwork in. Now the IRS can go to them and because their name and address is going to be right on that form, and that's who they're going to go to collect. And that's where you want to go.
So essentially you're trying to make the county responsible or the state responsible in whichever case it may be, and they don't want to be, so they're going to get it off their books.
Right. That's where we want it to go.
So why not put the county recorder or something on there?
Well, you can. Again, you can, absolutely. You betcha. If you want to do that, you can make them the liable party. You know, like I say, we've seen people that have done it, especially in court cases, where they make one person the debtor, the fiduciary debtor, and another person the fiduciary trustee. You can make the U.S. attorney the fiduciary debtor. Now, he's the one. If the person's found guilty, guess who goes to jail? The fiduciary debtor, so it's a nice little turnaround. Nice little tool there. So, Okay, if that's all, we're kind of running late tonight. I kind of let it go. But what we want to do is cut it off here, and we're going to call this a night. Now, we're going to go on. There's more to this, and I want, you know, I'm trying to go slow so you guys can understand it. So we'll do maybe a short review of it on the next call and then go right into the next step of what's going on here and what we found in that IMF. So we're going to call it a night here, and that's a wrap. Thank you, everybody, for being on the call tonight.